Welcome to the Rooted Business Podcast, where we understand that business is a spiritual practice. This is a space where soul-aligned creatives and entrepreneurs learn how to grow their purposeful businesses. I'm your host, Kat Hosu Lee, and I'm here to help you cultivate a sustainably profitable, ethically grounded business that follows the rhythms of nature. On this podcast, my guests and I share wisdom about anchoring into your relationship to intuition, emotional alchemy, and somatic healing to weave it into the foundations of your work so it nourishes you and ripples out into healing for the collective. I am so excited to share that the doors for Business Alchemist Mentorship are now open. BAM is my 9-month group and individual coaching journey for creatives and service-based spiritual entrepreneurs who view business as a catalyst for personal and collective transformation. You will join a community that seeks to align our businesses with nature's cycles and our soul's purpose to grow ethical and regenerative businesses. Embracing business as a spiritual practice can change the world for the better and also bring you money in ethical, value-driven ways. This happens by working not only with tangible business strategies, but also with the energetics of business, such as honoring the rhythms of both you and your business as living beings, healing emotional inner child wounds, incorporating intuition and your Tao, which is your soul's purpose, into your business, and finding nervous system regulation to invite success and abundance into your entrepreneurship journey. When you do this, you're no longer acting from the scarcity and extractivist and productivity mindset of capitalism. Rather, you're moved by the regenerative rhythms of nature that are already alive inside of you. This transforms your business from another draining job into a channel for you to feel alive and supported while you embody your soul's purpose. If hearing me talk about all this sent a little ping to your heart, I'd love to hear more about your business and see if BAM might be a good fit to join you. Go to businessalchemistmentorship.com to learn more, fill out an application, and we'll hop on a connection call and chat a little further. I look forward to hearing from you. Hello, and welcome to the Empowered Curiosity Podcast. Before we get into the meat of this episode, I want to give you a bit of context for what's been happening this week. The Pfizer vaccination for the coronavirus just became approved by the FDA. And here in British Columbia, where I am residing at the moment, we are going to be required to register for a vaccine card in order to participate in some activities, some social activities. And everyone has an opinion and a lot of feelings about this, which is exactly why I invited Jessica Benstock onto this episode to just talk about this. We are both really, really nerdy about trauma, and so what we are seeing in the collective is a lot of traumatized feelings being launched back and forth over the ideological chasms, and we want to be able to support you in being able to hold conversations, difficult conversations with people that you love in the context of these ideological chasms. So you are welcome to this conversation regardless of how you feel about the coronavirus, how you feel about the vaccine. We know how hard and how triggering and how frustrating and heartbreaking it is to have this conversation with somebody who has different opinions and feelings about this. So it's really going to be about talking about how to move through this moment that we are all collectively experiencing in history in a trauma-informed way and how to bridge these ideological chasms. So we're going to talk about the coronavirus and the vaccine, but this is really just the playground that's presenting itself this moment. We've seen the same dynamics playing out with religion and abortion and presidential elections, you name it. Anytime there is a us versus them sort of dynamic in social systems, this comes into play. So these days, the media is portraying the story as us versus them, right versus wrong, Republican versus Democrats, liberals versus conservatives, and we live in a time when you may actually agree with 8 out of the 10 things that your quote-unquote team believes in, but if you have questions or you differ about the other 2 points, you get kicked out of the circle. But when you start talking with people, when you start really listening, it's so much more nuanced than my team versus your team. And this conversation that I'm sharing with you that I had with Jess is really a call to bring nuance back into the rhetoric in these really divisive issues.
Because right now, what we're seeing rippling through the collective is a whole lot of traumatized people scrambling for safety. That's why on one side, we have people calling for everyone to get vaccinated, regardless of how receiving that vaccine feels like in the body of the person receiving it. And then on the other side, we have people trying to point out how this vaccine may be unsafe to be putting in bodies in general. And there are lots of nuanced iterations in between. And what I see is an entire population of traumatized people standing on ideological platforms trying to yell at each other to see things my way over the chasms that are dividing us. Both sides are laying out what they consider to be well-reasoned arguments, papers supporting their views, articles confirming their beliefs, and it doesn't seem to be going very well. And that's because we are denying the emotional experience of the other person, the other human being we're trying to have a conversation with. We are bypassing the very real feelings of fear and panic, and we are brushing over the very real human experiences that this person may have experienced in the last 2 years. We're seeing a lot of dysregulated nervous systems. I mean, think about it. The last 2 years has been us navigating COVID. You may have lost someone from the coronavirus. We've all been asked to quarantine. Some of us have had to learn how to navigate working from home. We've had to figure out how to homeschool your kids, not being able to make plans for the next week, the next month, next year, feeling uncertain about the presidential election. A lot of us are unlearning the cultural through lines that some of us are actively untangling. And so we are all doing hard, scary things that we've never done before. And what are the two things that we need in order to process trauma? We need movement and we need co-regulation. And this year, both of those things have been taken away from us. We've had to stay indoors, so we've not been able to move. And we've been asked to not see the people that we love. And so when we have dysregulated nervous systems that have not had a chance to return to a state of safety, we start scanning for danger and threat. And what media is telling us right now is that the person on the other team is dangerous. And that's why we're seeing these chasms in our families, in lifelong friendships, between neighbors, and fingers are being pointed rather than hands being extended. Words are being flung as bombs instead of being used for inquiry. And if you felt triggered this week and had a difficult conversation with someone, be completely honest. Did you go into that conversation trying to understand them? Or did you go in armed with data and facts and sources to try to convince them to see things your way? Of course you did this thing with the facts and the sources, because love and curiosity towards someone who might have a different viewpoint from you these days is seen as an act of treason. And this week, I'm seeing so much heartache all around, no matter how you feel about the coronavirus or masks or mandates or vaccines. This morning, I was just scrolling through Instagram and I ran across Lindsay Lockett's Instagram page. And she shared something that I felt really resonated with me. And by the way, she's going to be joining us on the podcast in a couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that one. But she said, anytime we think we've figured something out, anytime we judge something or make a conclusion about something, we block our awareness. And when we live in question, meaning we don't jump to conclusions and we remain open, we're able to receive and expand our awareness to what else is possible. I was sitting with this, and I think another way to think about this is to approach what feels triggering to us like we would approach a scientific experiment. I've been studying science my entire life, and science is this beautiful, evolving field where we put on our curiosity hats, we ask questions, we look at data, and we discern the story that emerges. We don't go in with a preordained story and look for evidence to support that story. So true science requires a healthy dose of asking questions and then questioning those questions. And this is absolutely going to piss off your ego, because your ego is designed to filter out contradictory information to your pre-existing beliefs, and it's doing that as a protective mechanism. Your ego doesn't like questions because questions may poke holes in the story that it has created to keep you safe. And questions are also going to freak out your inner child, because your inner child loves structure and it loves security. And right now, as hard as it is to accept, We are collectively living a moment in history, and we can't flip to the end of this choose-your-own-adventure novel. Science grows through coming up against things we don't know and asking questions. It's not prescriptive. It's not binary. So not knowing, while that is so scary, means that we are collectively growing. So we need to be asking questions right now, not in an accusatory way, but with curiosity and compassion. And this is why I've asked Jess to join me in today's episode, so that we can begin the process of applying the scientific method to these difficult conversations that we are all going to be having in the days, the weeks, the months, possibly years to come. So here's Jess. Hello, and welcome to the Empowered Curiosity Podcast. Today, I am so grateful that I get to catch up with my dear friend, Jess Benstock. She's been on the podcast a few times already now. And something that we've both been complete nerds about for years now is trauma. Specifically, how trauma shows up in the body, how it manifests emotionally. And we're in such an interesting epoch of humanity right now, because we're seeing, I can't not see trauma when I watch the news these days. And I really wanted to explore this concept of a collective trauma response. And I could not think of a better person to do this with than with Jess. So I am so grateful that Jess, you've agreed to get into these deep waters with me and to explore this space, because I think it's a conversation that a lot of people are honestly so hungry for. So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. You're one of my favorite people to explore deep waters with. So I'm excited to dive in and see what we find.
Let's start with understanding trauma is such a new concept. It's really only been around for a couple of decades. And so I think we have to start with this understanding of this is such new information. This is such new territory and emotions that we're all collectively diving into. So I think that we should start with a little bit of a discussion of, call it a history lesson, of what our understanding of trauma has been like up until now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good point because, even within those couple decades, it was like a weird underground thing. When I was studying it, it was this kind of hippie, weird, alternative thing that was working for a lot of therapists, but that wasn't taught in your universities. There wasn't a social media, Instagram.
Hashtag around it.
Yeah. Like, I was a very weird creature for being interested in these things, because it just, now you say trauma and everyone knows that word. But I think one of the things I notice a lot is it's really hard to see where we're at on a span of evolution, because we're just so in it. Whereas if you do look back, the understanding of brainwaves, pretty new in the last 100 years, I would say, the understanding of the nervous system. They're continuously coming out with new studies about now around the vagus nerve, but really only the past 15 years that has that been really a topic that's been dove into. And none of us previously, at least in recorded history, at least in the US and the Western world, have been taught about emotional regulation. We haven't been taught about self-ownership of our emotions. We haven't been taught how to properly process emotions, because our culture is extremely cerebral. So there's been a lot more of a highlighting of intelligent functioning and intellectual functioning, and really a putting to the side of the emotional understanding of things and the emotional intelligence that we have, as well as,
and somatic experiencing.
Yeah, exactly. How we feel emotions through our bodies. How our state of mind, our state of being, our state of perception is altered greatly by emotion, which we all know, but none of that has been taught. And these conversations are so brand new to the collective that, I think we really got to keep that. We have to keep that in mind. And it's not that people didn't know about it. People have known about this stuff. People, when I say people in specific, like advertising companies have known about our psychology and our core fears and what makes us buy things and, what drives us, and, you know, core drivers and core fears. And psychology has known about this, but again, just from the intellectual state, not really from the somatic and nervous system and emotional state. Yeah, it's just, it's been something that we have not been empowered to even be present with until very, mm-hmm. very recently, but it's kind of coming mm-hmm. out of a subculture. And I would say we're still in a subculture.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a bubble compared to the collective, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. We also kind of forget to track our nervous systems, and we can talk about this in a little bit, but mm-hmm. they don't know how to handle the amount of information and awareness that we have right now. So like what's recently happened with the Taliban, which has been very recent, we wouldn't have even been remotely aware of that 40 years ago. And then mm-hmm. if you think about the, and maybe we would have through a radio system, but if you think about the amount of information you're getting about everything going on in the world, the different perspectives of everything going on, the constant stimulation of the phone, the constant stimulation of different kinds of information, all these different vantage points, that's brand new. Like our system has not been used to functioning and digesting all of that. And it does stress us out a lot. But it's hard to talk about that because we're the first ones to experience it. You know, we're not banking off of the thousands, if not depending on mm-hmm. how long they say humans have been alive, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years of skills developing over time mm-hmm. with repetitive experience. So,
I think something that's really important to note is through the emergence of understanding trauma, something that has been so illuminating in my own healing journey and supporting others in their healing journeys is understanding that it doesn't have to be a big T trauma for your nervous system to get pushed into a sympathetic response. And I think that it's important for us to define that a sympathetic response is not a bad thing. Like, I think a lot of times people think, oh, I should always be in a parasympathetic meditative state. And that's not the case. It is an evolutionary survival skill for you to be able to be in your sympathetic in times when there is stress. And it may have saved your ancestors' lives. It may have saved your life even to be able to enact that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn response. But I think that a lot of times people don't think that trauma affects them on a daily basis because they haven't had a big T trauma moment like abuse or a giant accident or some other form of debilitating big T trauma. Like small T trauma can also, over time, over just a long period of feeling destabilized, can also have an effect on your nervous system in this way. And what you're saying is so true in that we've never before in our human lifetimes had to be so on and just existing as a human being with technology requires you to be in sympathetic a lot of times just to be able to process the information that's coming at you all the time. And so I think that that's an important thing to understand as we start talking about where and why these collective trauma responses are happening in our communities.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, there's so much relief in people when they understand, similar to, like, I had a similar experience too, where it's like, oh, okay, I didn't think that it was this, like it had to be this huge thing. And I time and time again talk to people where they're like, my childhood was great, or I've been doing good, like everything's been fine. And then you start to kind of point out the more subtle experiences that we're having to be coped with, and you realize, oh, okay, maybe that did alter my state, my thoughts, who mm-hmm. I became, where my values were, where my choices came from. Yeah, choices and decisions and all of that being influenced by those states.
And I think that this is where archetypes are so helpful, is being able to identify certain aspects or parts of yourself as having helped you survive. And so, like, the ones that I go to that I'm seeing so much in the collective right now is, like, the good girl, good boy archetype of, like,
you know, you must do as you're told, or the perfectionist archetype. Like, if you think about, if you identify with either of those archetypes and you think about your childhood, are those the parts of you that kept you safe? And is that what you go to now as the world feels more and more unsafe, particularly in the face of the coronavirus right now?
Yeah, totally. Well, and there's so much in those. So like when we talk about archetypes, the kind of personas or sub-personalities, ways of being that are really fascinating because they're like mapped within like the collective human psyche. And so we all have our own kind of pull and ways of growing into them, growing out of them, or just noticing that there's patterns, and they are the default, you know, they are the default. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was just teaching about this yesterday, actually, where a lot of the time with mindset work, for example, you try to work on thoughts, but those thoughts may be coming from an experience of the sub-personality that you're in, or the vantage point that you're viewing through the world. Like you said, like the perfectionist is going to have certain thoughts about themselves and other people and the world. And then behind that layer of the onion, you have whatever other things in their trauma response that have come up, or self-identification that have come up, emotions that have been triggered, ways they want to be loved or accepted or feel safe or feel like they're a part of things. And so there's all these, we're talking about, if we talk about the perfectionist, there's definitely hypervigilance, but mm-hmm. you know, levels of awareness of, if I act this way, I get this. And if I don't, mm-hmm. I get something else that's bad. And so mm-hmm. I'm going to act this way because there is some kind of fear, belief system, and probably core experiences that say that if I don't right now, it's going to be really bad. And when you get behind that, eventually you get to this core emotion, just a raw, deep emotional experience that probably didn't get time to be processed, and that's created this entire network of a personality to respond yeah. to the environment when that core emotion is stimulated to protect itself. Yeah. And yeah. so similar to like Chinese medicine, I know that you and I totally connect on this, is mm-hmm. when we think about things from the source level of what's animating everything else versus the mm-hmm. symptom level. And I'm talking about psychology now, but like ancient medicine practices do this too. And that's why I think they work so well. You get a whole different vantage point of what's going on in the system. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. What we wanted to get to is understanding what's been happening in the world in light of the coronavirus. And I think this week in particular, things are starting to, I don't know if I want to say like coming to a head, but definitely. Yeah. And I think that because Jess and I are nerdy about trauma, like what we're actually seeing is the collective trauma response on both ends of the spectrum. And I would love for us to be able to talk about and investigate that, but then also be able to share with our audience members tangible tools on how to have conversations that are more rooted and anchored instead of being vortex conversations with these people that they love that may not share the same ideologies or may not share the same nuanced ideologies as them. So yeah, we're gonna dive into some stuff here.
No matter what your viewpoints are, and this is going to be like a meta version of this, talking to the listeners, is no matter what your viewpoints are, that's not the point of this specific conversation. This specific mm-hmm. conversation is about finding the part of you that is able to be present in the midst of bigger emotions coming up, and also mm-hmm. specifically the relationships that you really want to keep, the relationships that mm-hmm. maybe you've had for a really long time, or with your family members, or with friends that you totally love and enjoy and want to keep in your life, and are having this conflict around, well, you know, there's kind of a trend right now where people are just throwing each other out of each other's lives. And this was happening in the 2020 elections, and now it's happening because of different positions on the coronavirus and what's going on. And so, you know, we're heading into tricky territory with this conversation where clearly there's a lot of hot buttons around everything right now. And the point is to gear back into the underlying feelings, emotions, experiences going on in your system, and possibly a route into how to understand people that you really love and care about that may be on a different side of the spectrum of viewpoints mm-hmm. right now than you are.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for naming that. I think, listener, no matter what your viewpoint is around the coronavirus or the vaccine, or if you are vaccinated or you're not vaccinated, like, you are welcome to this conversation, because it really is not about the vaccine. Like, we're almost using that as the playground in which to explore these concepts of trauma and trauma responses, because that seems to be what's rippling through the collective right now. But really, like, you can overlay this conversation onto anything. It can be political ideologies, it could be religion, it could be how you view your body, it could be so many things where the underlying root emotion is connected to trauma. And when two people who are in a traumatized state come to a conversation and you end up pushing each other's buttons, how can we bridge that gap between two people who love each other and approach the conversation from a place of compassion and, like, true compassion, not just let's agree to disagree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How amazing would it be if this was taught in school, you know? But we're the thing with the trauma response is it is a response oftentimes from something being destabilized as a young person. Mm-hmm. And even right now, you know, what we got to think about, kind of laying a context for even core fears. So primal fears are mm-hmm. getting kicked out of the tribe, being abandoned yeah. by others, fear of death. Because if mm-hmm. you used to get kicked out of the tribe, it was really hard to be a nomad by yourself and survive.
Survive, yeah.
And so that's so at the core of our DNA and our beings is being ostracized, being abandoned, being kicked out. And most people, I would say, have a fear of death. There is a certain quality of emotional charge or intensity that comes with the primal fears. And so trauma normally, at least when I talk about it, and I think most people, it's like we're talking about what happened when you were a kid and then how that's manifested. But then now we're adding not only those things, because we all have mm-hmm. a history of things that have happened that mm-hmm. likely we probably didn't all process perfectly. And mm-hmm. we're adding the very clear fear of death and fear of being kicked out and those
not
things.
Belonging.
Not belonging, totally. Mm-hmm. And those things really inhibit how we see one another.
Yeah.
Like the chemical yeah. cocktail in our brains when those are happening is yeah. a full-on drug and not right. a fun one.
Right, yeah. right. Which is all another way to say that if you are in a sympathetic response around this right now, it is understandable. There's nothing broken about you. There's nothing wrong with you. It is hitting on some core, as Jess said, some core evolutionary drivers that helped us survive. And so this fear of not belonging, this fear of death, they're so very much tied into each other. And the virus right now is really playing on two major themes here. And so if you're in a sympathetic response, like, this is not anything to be ashamed of. This is something to explore.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I mean, that's right within the name of your podcast. There's, like, one of my favorite words, which is curiosity and mm-hmm. real self-knowledge, evolution of your emotional system, ability to be present in the midst of other people who are really triggered because, you know, our nervous system mm-hmm. resonate with each other. So if someone isn't regulated, if someone is in a really intense response or is very emotionally fueled or has a very strong opinion fueled by a very strong emotion,
yeah,
your system's going to feel that. And so the curiosity around what you're feeling, what they're feeling. And there's so much more going on in a conversation than the words and the information that you're talking about. And I think that's really where the biggest divide starts.
Yeah. I think what that brings up for me is one of the ways that we get out of a traumatized state is through co-regulation. And specifically through co-regulation with others who are able to meet you in your sympathetic response. Like, you're able to dip into that and like have their mirror neurons turn on, and then you feel that resonance with that person, but they're able to also stay anchored in their parasympathetic. But what I've been observing is, because this has hit such a core, deep driver of survival, it's almost like there's this vortexy, quicksandy, I need you to meet me here, and if you want to belong in my tribe, you have to be in the sympathetic with me. And so I'd love to hear your take on what you've been seeing in the collective.
Really. If you've been on social media in the past year and a half, 2 years, you know what's going on. It's like a warfare in a lot of common threads. And I think one of the things within that is, one, I think we greatly underestimate the feeling of like how we can experience energy through reading something on a computer or on a phone. And two, that it's really easy to turn someone from a human being with a life and breath and fears and hopes and dreams and like, a, you know, once you're sitting next to someone, it's a very different experience than when you're on a computer. And, you know, our mind, whether we like it or not, very, very often can shrink that person down to just one of those people. And I think that's created a really, and that, by the way, that can happen in person with people as well. I just want to highlight that it happens way faster a lot of the time online. But what it also does is, you know, one of the things that I've seen and experienced and had to navigate in my own life is that, you know, people can want to, if you have some kind of opposing opinion or a nuanced view, or even sometimes an inquiry into something that challenges a perspective that they may have, even if that's not a, it's not an aggressive challenge, it's literally just a questioning of something. It can be very, very easy right now to be told that you're dangerous, that you're bad, that you're wrong, or told that you're dumb and you're stupid and that you're an idiot and that you're a sheep. And those are kind of like the sides. That's really common when you're in a trauma response, you're in a beta brainwave. And when you're in a beta brainwave, you have way less capacity to think, perceive, experience, and feel, because you're in sensory overload. And the brain literally just is very, very well known to put people in binary categories, or to put things in binary categories, right? It's either good or bad, right or wrong. And I think that's the big thing that I see going on right now, is there is, which is so interesting, because humans are, we're so nuanced. And we're so not binary. I mean, there is clear like delineations, like left hand, right hand, masculine energy, feminine energy, these kinds of things. But you know, we are complex, and it's unfortunate. And there's something I would think, the last thing I'll say to that is, it's interesting to be on a certain side of feeling my certain people in my family all of the sudden having a almost like superimposition of something like over how they're seeing me. And so even though they've known me for my whole life, even the people that have known me for my whole life at times have put me in certain categories. And I'm sure I've put them in certain categories as well. Like, I'm not you know, I don't think any of us are, oh, I don't do that. You know, unless you're evolved, you've probably been doing this in some way or another. And it's just not the truth of the situation. It doesn't account for so many things.
Yeah. I think the little piece of physiology that I want to layer on top of that too is you talked about beta brain waves. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's one of my personal check-ins to see if I'm in a sympathetic mode is, am I thinking in a binary way? Because when we are in sympathetic, our brain does this thing where it narrows out the two best choices. Like, if you think about what sympathetic used to mean, it was like, I'm fucking running away from a bear right now. It doesn't make sense to scan the horizon and pick out 10 routes that might, you know, turn out. Like, it really comes down to, am I going to turn left or am I going to turn right? Like, it really is just that simple.
Yeah, run or hide.
Yeah. And so that's what your brain is doing when you slip into binary thinking. And so, like, just to reiterate what Jess said, it's like that right or wrong. Is this good or bad? It's run or hide. And so just as like a personal check-in for yourself, like if you feel yourself slipping into binary thinking, like that's a moment to, again, invoke your curiosity and be like, okay, so I need to do something, because there's not a whole lot of good conversations that come out of a sympathetic response, particularly if both people are coming at it. Like, particularly if both people are coming at it from a sympathetic response. If you have trust with somebody, then you can sort of ask to be held in a container. But if both people are coming to the conversation expecting to be held in a container and them not understanding the role of like, hey, I'm in a sympathetic response, I need co-regulation, because people generally don't speak that way. it's going to be a hard conversation to have. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this is why, again, nervous system is not broken. Nervous system is doing exactly what it was designed to do. And it is perceiving your best friend, your family member, somebody who has a question about the vaccine, somebody who has a question about the virus, seeing them as a threat instead of seeing the nuanced person that they are. And so if this is you on either end of the spectrum or somewhere in the middle, and you feel yourself in that space of binary thinking, that's an invitation to check in with yourself and see what you need to do to self-regulate to a parasympathetic state.
Totally. And like the shoulds that come in with that too are very much like, you should be acting like this, you should be acting like that. And it is on both of the sides. Like, either you are supposed to be, if we look at the way that it's set up, you're either supposed to be an extreme radical, almost like anarchist in certain ways, or you should go along with every single thing that, you know, is being said on CNN and is being said, you know, on like common news sources. And there's no room, somewhat is what it seems like. There's no mm-hmm. room for that in between. And yet most of us have, again, like people that we love, people that we connect with, people that we value, people that we look up to, that probably have, or people that we respect, that probably have opposing opinions right now. And it's a really good time to have that internal voice of self-questioning, of saying like, okay, what am I feeling right now? Mm-hmm. Am I, like, have I taken my experience with this person and who I know them to be, and their values and all of these things totally out of the picture, and just slapped a name tag on them that mm-hmm. says, oh, you're one of those people from the other side, the same way we do with politics. It's like there is something about, again, diminishing people into objects versus connecting with the person underneath the ideologies or mm-hmm. ideas or worldviews or perspectives that we are, you know, it's making us miss what you're talking about. It's making us miss, like, the fact I loved what you said. I want to, like, make that, I don't know, you should make that an Instagram quote where it, like, what did you say? Very few helpful conversations are had in a sympathetic state. And I just think about, and if everyone can think about that right now, like, when you have been triggered, when you have been in a fight or flight response, when you have just been, like, irked, you know, if we take it mm-hmm. out of the polyvagal terminology and into, like, you have just been, like, mad or annoyed or hurt or scared or really worried or really stressed out, when then had a conversation with someone, especially a conversation with someone that maybe had an opposing viewpoint, like, how did that conversation go? You know, and if the other person, especially if the other person was inflamed as well in the conversation, mm-hmm. like, did you ever actually get to any solution? Were they able to hear your side? Were you able to hear their side? Were you able to understand? Mm-hmm. Or is there a different state that you can recognize in your lived experience that allows you to perceive multiple different things, be a lot more open, and not make extreme choices of, like, abandoning someone or slandering someone or calling them out or whatever, hating them, cutting them off from your life. And those actions that we take are fueled by the states that we're in when we take them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the thing that, you know, you're pointing to with the co-regulation is there is actually a limited conversation and limited even availability of things that can happen depending on the emotional and nervous system state that you are in when you're talking about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you just connected the dots on something for me, because I really, really, really struggle with cancel culture. It brings up all of my anxious attachment wounds. So, like, all the things that I want to say, like, but beyond that, like, to me, what that's advertising is this is somebody who has not done their trauma work. And specifically, somebody who has not done their trauma work and they have overlaid, you know, like, and slapped a label on somebody. And when you're in a sympathetic state, it's so easy to objectify people. Instead of seeing that nuanced human underneath, it's so easy to be like, oh, you're that kind of person, or label them as a sheep, or label them as a selfish anti-vaxxer. I think that this is where, like, we don't get anywhere collectively when we resort to those methods. And if anything, it perpetuates trauma, right? Because there's no conversation being had. There's no trying to understand the other person's point of view. I think also important to note here is that understanding somebody's point of view is not the same as agreeing with them. Mm. And agreement does not need to happen in order for you to feel like you belong with that person that you love. Mm-hmm. You connected some dots there for me, and I just had to say that out loud.
Well, it's huge because I think one of the things that that points to is how immature we are emotionally as a collective. Like, the fact that, like, in my experience, the more you get in a room with a bunch of people who have done trauma work on themselves for a decade, you're going to have way different conversations that are able to happen in that room than people that haven't. There's been this process of self-reflection, introspection, questioning of your own motives. I mean, wow, mm-hmm. just the ability to be like, maybe my perception is off or is being informed by an emotional trigger, or maybe I'm projecting, or maybe I have responsibility at all within my emotional reaction. And I have to take responsibility to evolve it and work with it and confront how deeply something may affect me. Like, those are muscles of maturity that evolve, in my experience and from what I've seen, from doing this kind of inner work. Whereas with cancel culture, it's very much, you know, the like, there's something about attempting to get some kind of cathartic experience through condemnation of others, and that feeling of righteousness. And some trauma responses, you know, we say trauma response, and it could be, I think a lot of people for a while thought trauma response is like, I'm cowering in the corner. A trauma response can feel very righteous and very powerful and very like, I am in the right now and you are not, and you are bad and evil and wrong, and like, I know what's going on and I'm going to punish you for it. That
there's
can
the
be
binary
a trauma
thinking
response.
Right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because it's a bit different than feeling like, the other kind of side of that gradient, which is like, I'm either totally disassociated from my body, I don't know what's going on, and I'm like over there, or I'm in a freeze response and like really scared and can't express, or I'm beating myself up. I think it's, I mean, both of them have their own like flavors, but you know, I think that there is something that we're really seeing, at least for me, like I'm seeing in the collective of, and I've got, you know, I'm sure I have tons more work to do, but you know, going on 12 years of this stuff, it's like, I've done a chunk, and there is something that you can really see where there are a bunch of adults walking around with nervous systems of stunted children that didn't get the safety or clarity or a processing that was needed in certain moments. And that's still projecting onto whatever the adult mind wants to talk about or perceive, you know?
Yeah. And when we have those unprocessed emotions and feelings of not feeling safe in childhood, and we aren't willing to take responsibility over those parts of ourselves and to try to reparent ourselves and to try to process those traumas, we end up looking to other people to fulfill that for us. You know, whether that's looking to have that part of us validated or nourished, but also sometimes looking, and I think that this is where the cancel culture piece comes into play, is almost looking at other people as like in your righteousness, trying to convince them. And so if you come up against somebody who is unconvincible in your opinion, then that trauma response says, well, like, fuck it, I'm just going to cancel them. I don't need to talk to them anymore. Right. And so I think here's another invitation for y'all, is when you're feeling that, because I mean, I'm a human being doing this very human work alongside you, Jess, and alongside everyone who's listening. Like, I've certainly felt like, oh, it would be easier for me to just cut this person out of my life. Mm-hmm. Or it's easier for me to just dissociate from this person or dissociate from their ideology. Or I think a more mild case of that is let's agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that space, again, it's an invitation to get curious about, like, what part of your inner child didn't get a need met, and how can you responsibly ask to have that need met by other people or have that need met through your own self-work?
Yeah, totally. And well, I mean, the agree to disagree thing too is an aggressive, like, I'm going to take control of the external situation, so don't talk anymore so that I don't have to process what I'm experiencing anymore, which is a very, when it comes from that kind of space. And it doesn't, you know, I mean, it's all of our freedom to participate in our lives however we want to or don't want to. And what I find so interesting, and I recently actually had to create a boundaries highlight in my for my DM etiquette is what I called it.
I saw that.
And yeah. It felt so good to create on my Instagram because, you know, it really, one of the core things that I recognize that I just want is obey the golden rule. If you want to change, if your actual core intention is to change my perspective on something, then you need to be curious about, and you want me to be curious and open to all the ways that you've gotten to your perspective so that you can influence mine. I expect the same in return. I expect an open curiosity around how I've come to the conclusions that I've come to. And I'm open to you influencing mine. Like, there's people that I follow on social media who I completely don't agree with, but I want to understand their side of things. I want to understand their point of things. And there's some people that have actually convinced me out of a previous, you know, standpoint that I held clear to, that I realized, like, oh, I was perceiving this the wrong way, or I wasn't nuanced in my thinking, or I didn't understand that this is actually what was being conveyed. I mistook it as that. And, and I suggest that actually, depending on where you're at in your own process, it's nice to have a phase on social media where you're not just in an echo chamber of your own beliefs. I feel like it's really valuable actually to, experience oppositions in life because we learn and we grow through them. But going back to this golden rule piece, it's like, if you expect me to respect you, you need to come with that energy towards me. If you expect me to, you know, listen and be open and be receptive to you, I expect that you're going to do the same in return.
Right.
And I think that this is a fundamental rule within, you know, human connection that, one, before all this stuff, I think it was hard to attain and be in and be present in, especially an emotional reaction. But now that we're in a 2-year trauma response, that's gone out the window for most people. And so there is a level of, like, for me, I have to learn to regulate myself. I have to learn to lead by example with that. But I also have a pretty clear boundary within myself of, like, if we're going to have a conversation, I'm going to be really clear with you from the get-go that the moment that there is making fun of me, slandering me, grouping me into one of those people, passive-aggressive comments, emotional vomiting, I'm not going to be on the receiving end of that. I understand that there's imperfections. I'm not expecting everyone to be perfect, but I do have expectations around, no matter what we're talking about, how you are choosing to align presently and consciously in the conversation with yourself and with me, because I'm not going to have a conversation with someone that's just there to spit on me or there to be like, you, if you don't see my viewpoint and you don't agree with me, then we can't be friends anymore. Yeah. It's like, that's your decision. And that's really sad if that's the decision that you're going to make, because that totally discounts everything else about me. But, you know, I'm open to hearing other perspectives, like I said, but also on the other end of that, like, it's almost silly to think about how we think we're going to actually change the world in whatever ways we want to change it. The thing is, there's core values that we all want. We want our world to be safe, healthy, supported, supportive, you know, collaborative. We want to feel unification. We want to feel mutual respect for all people. We want equal rights for all people. We want, you know, we want all of that, but instead of connecting through actually embodying those values to connect with each other one-on-one, the way that the propaganda is working right now is it's dividing people more and more.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting too, because I feel like on both sides of the spectrum, the tactic is to coerce through fear or shame.
Yeah.
And the thing is that if you're trying to coerce someone through fear or shame and they are a secure person, like, that tactic is not going to work. And I think that that speaks to what we were talking about earlier, in terms of a lot of times people have this, like, to me, it feels like hungry ghost energy of like come join me in my fear. Come join me in my need to take care of the community. Come join me in my need to not be a sheep. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think that folks like Jess and I are easier to convince. It just has to be done through logic and curiosity and questioning and openness, rather than through closed energy.
Yeah.
Because all along this whole, I don't know, year and a half, I have changed my mind so many times on how safe and unsafe I feel based on the newest information that's coming out. But what has not happened is I've not given into the fear of, like, what's reverberating through the collective. And I think that that's really threatening for some people.
Oof, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that there's so much we could dive into on that. Because it's fascinating to me, like, why is that threatening is a really, really key. There's so much in that. And one of the things that I realized the other day, after just getting the coronavirus beginning of this month and moving through it and moving through the brain fog after, and you know, like, it wasn't fun, but I moved through it. I went through it, and it really showed me where my mind could go into fear. Like, when I first got it, I watched my mind go, oh my God, you could die and you're at risk, da, 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 versus, and then I had to recognize, like, wait, that's actually not my thoughts. That's like this collective echo chamber of fear. But now, because I'm having symptoms and I, like, clearly this is what's happening right now, and I contracted it from a close friend, right? And she told me that she got, you know, the whole thing lined up, like, oh, this is what's happening. That fear was so ready within this collective mind to have, and even afterwards too. And I realized from that, like, fear is being treated as if it is a necessity right now, and that if you do not have it, there is something wrong with you. And one of the things that I do have a ton of compassion for is, there are people who have had, and there's all sorts of nuances within this, right? But there are people that I know who have had people die. And there are influencers online who, I love this woman. She's totally goes off on people that don't want to take vaccines and things, but she's so funny. Her name's Caitlin Riley. I don't know if you follow her, but she's just like a TikTok comedian. And she's very, like, she's very, you know, full liberal, full anti-vaxxer. And there's not room for nuance, right? There is that, like, very extreme on one side. And like I say, I follow people extreme on both sides. And I don't agree with most of them because they're so extreme on the side they are. There's no room for nuance. But, you know, she shared these things that are, you know, very, like, making fun of people that don't want vaccines, et cetera. But then she also has shared, like, her dad died. She had to say goodbye to her dad in a hazmat suit. That's so, like, it makes 100% sense to me that she has so much pain around this. And I talked recently to a friend of mine's mom who, you know, was telling me her feelings and what I should be doing and why I should be doing it. And then I asked, you know, hey, this is my experience. These are my perceptions. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt because I know you care about me and I know you know I care about you. And what she opened up from that was she was like, I am just in protective mama energy right now. I just had a friend that died. I don't know what to do. I'm scared. And yeah. when I have started to look underneath the surface of, are you pro or against? Are you this or that? It's like, there is fear. And mm-hmm. a lot of direct experiences that people have had or stories that people have heard that have every right to feel, make people have every right to feel that fear. But that doesn't mean that, to your point, and I think I'm so curious about this, is like, that doesn't mean that I need to feel fear. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I need to be aware of it.
Yeah.
And have compassion and empathy and like really look at what's happening, right? But it doesn't mean that I need to be in fear. And the fact that I am not in fear, at least initially to certain people, feels really dangerous to their system.
Yeah.
Because I think the way, and I'm curious your perspective on this, but I perceive that the reason for that is because it just means that I'm going to be completely unaware, walking around, you know, sneezing on everyone or whatever. I'm getting extreme, but like that thought process is extreme. It's like I'm going to have no awareness of other people or no care for other people or, you know, these kinds of things because I'm not afraid. Right. That's the main thing that I, and because I'm not doing what people who are in fear are being told to do.
Yeah.
Hold back.
Oh my goodness. So much to play with there. I think that just to tag onto this concept of fear, I actually think that my role, and this is from having done, you know, a decade and a half of work around this, is the more that I get into my clinical practice, the more that I get into my spiritual practice and relational practices, I used to think, because this is how I was raised and this is my own trauma around this, is I used to think that it was my role to take on everybody's pain. And that I was meant to be the savior of all the things and meant to fix all the things and make sure that nobody else felt uncomfortable, right? And so when somebody tugs at me and says, why aren't you afraid? To me, what I'm hearing is, I need you to help me take on this pain. And that's not my role anymore, having done this work. And actually, I'm in disservice of somebody if I just join them in that fear with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need more people who are anchored in being able to look at this from a witnessing perspective, because if we're all in an unregulated state, then how do we co-regulate, right? And so we need the co-regulators to stay anchored in their own sense of safety, to stay anchored in their own, you know, years of doing trauma work. Because there are going to be a lot of people who are coming at us with these trauma responses and being like, why? Why aren't you here with me?
Yeah.
You know, like, you need to join me here. And
yeah, that's getting promoted too. Very much like, how could you? Mm-hmm. You know, it's in a lot of the media. It's all over social media, but it's not a personal attitude. It's a collective viewpoint and attitude that has been echoed by a lot of people with very wide range of influence.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's also important to add.
Yeah.
To that. And I totally like hear that resistance that you're talking about, of like, actually, that's not really mine. Like that takes like a lot of boundaries work to realize if you come from that pattern. You kind of realize, like, from this standpoint, there is a sense of like, I've actually worked my ass off to gain the level of emotional clarity to discern that I have a choice in if I am feeling the same way that you're feeling, or if I'm not. You know?
And I mean, like, I think that a lot of helping professionals fall into and may resonate with this, because I remember my first couple semesters in acupuncture school giving treatments to some of the folks who are coming into the teaching hospital, and like they would come in with a headache and they would leave without a headache, but they would leave it with me, you know? And so like, I thought that part of my role was to take on their pain and then be able to process and digest it on my own and then like release it for them. That's not helpful, actually.
No. Very mnemonic technique is what that is. Yeah, it's not the only way to
be a healer. And it's not a way that feels sustainable and aligned with me, you know? And so I think, for me personally, when I come up against someone else's fear, my work is to attune with them. I think that's what you were talking about earlier when you were sharing about, you know, your friend's mom. Mm-hmm. Is like, okay, like this is coming from somewhere, and it comes from a deep sense of caring.
Yeah.
And I recognize that. Mm-hmm. And then that opens up the conversation. Instead of you coming at it from like an ideological perspective, you know? And so I find that when somebody comes at me with fear, my role is to attune with them and to stay anchored and to help co-regulate if they're open to it, you know? Not everyone is open to it.
No, and I think that's a really key factor. And that is, I think, as we start to venture into this part of the conversation, like, not everyone's going to be open to what we're talking about, but it's worth a shot every time, is my experience. If you really love the person, if you really care about the person, if you really value the friendship, there is a, for me at least, or relationship or family member, whatever it is, there is value in going the extra mile to see if you can connect with the state that they're in. And I've realized that, like, in training people to do trauma healing work and in doing it myself, like, that's kind of like my whole worldview. So what is normal to me to do and what you're talking about is, like, you know, feel where they're at, meet them at their state, be present with them there, but hold autonomy within my own regulated, grounded, present system is, you know, it's a muscle that I've built over time. It's not probably not commonplace. Mm-hmm. But everyone can build that. And a huge part of it comes from really realizing when the conversation is, when the conversation almost feels scripted. So if you take away the, you know, the fact that you know this person, the fact that they know you, are you guys having a conversation that you've heard a lot of times before? And are you ping-ponging back and forth in a way where you feel defensive and they feel defensive? And if so, you're probably not actually having a conversation. You're probably reiterating the same conversation that's being had all over the place. And that's what's going to help you connect, right? So what is going to help you connect is, can you understand and like question how have they been feeling, what's happened in their life that has made them on high alert about the thing that they're on high alert about, what's their personal experience that has been contributing to the state that they're in lately, and can you be with that, can you empathize with that, can you have compassion for that? Because from that point they're not going to be as on guard anymore. And they're not going to feel as judged. They're going to feel met. They're going to feel understood. They're going to feel like you took extra time to be curious about them. And can you just harmonize with them at that level? now when they start to open, you don't want to just pour on more, you know, studies and whatever, mm-hmm, but you want to create a sense of connection of like what your state's been at and like why you've been studying things the way that you've been studying them, not from a, I'm going to prove this to you, or yeah, you need to know this, or the fact that you know this makes you less than, but from a state of like, I see why you're there. Can I mm-hmm share where I am without bringing, and this is really key, without bringing a bunch of ideologies and perspectives and worldviews into that, but sharing mm-hmm your personal internal experience of where you're at.
Yeah.
And when you do that, now you are two humans connecting, not mm-hmm clashing worldviews, not clashing memes, not clashing groupthinks. You're yeah two humans. And so from absolutely there, you can start to open up about, and again, like golden rule, you want, I mean, you know, make sure you're not being a total martyr within this, but like, this really matters to you. Mm-hmm. You can lead with a sense of, okay, how did you get to where you're feeling now? Okay, cool. That makes sense. I'm going to put myself in your perspective and understand that deeply. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully they are also curious about, well, how did you get to where you're at now?
Yeah.
And yeah, then you have a different conversation going on. Completely different mm-hmm conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I, because in my program, The Heart Lab, we talk about like strategies on how to have rooted conversations versus how to have like what happens in a vortex conversation. And, you know, I think that the flip side, you know, I think of it as just like an on-ramp onto a different conversation. Moving away from let's agree to disagree is exactly what you're speaking to, is this like idea of let's try to understand each other, mm-hmm, and recognizing that understanding and saying I understand you does not mean now I have to change my belief system, I have to agree completely with you, I have to now get the vaccine or not get the vaccine. Like this is what happens when two people, two humans are allowed to resonate and connect on that deep level, is in that connection, you're both allowed to have autonomy and sovereignty over your own choices, over your own body, over what you choose to do with your life. And I think that that is, A, it shows a deep level of trauma work on both parties, if you can do that. But also, like you were saying earlier, it's a completely different conversation, mm-hmm, because it's rooted in curiosity and it's rooted in the parasympathetic. Because as soon as you try to open up and try to understand somebody's perspective and you try to like get into empathy, you can't do that from a sympathetic perspective. Mm-hmm. The other aspect of the sympathetic response, we talked about the binary thing, but like it's also very me-centered.
Yeah.
And it has to be me-centered, right? Because like in the case that we explained earlier of you running away from a bear, like it is your life, it is your body that is under threat. Like you can't worry about all the other things in your environment. And so the moment that you're feeling me-centered is another moment where you're like, ah, hi, sympathetic. Nice to see you again. Thank you for helping me survive in the past. And we need to do something different here, especially if we want to connect with somebody that we love.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, it's challenging, right? Because there's momentum behind it. I find it challenging. Like when I'm in, you know, have with them in relationships, if you have a disagreement, it's always the same disagreement. Doesn't matter what you're talking about. It's like, we're just doing the same thing that we do that puts us in fight or flight. And we're going back and forth. And the momentum and the energy behind going back and forth within that is very, it's enticing. It's alluring. It feels good to be righteous. It feels good to state your point. It feels, on the other level of it, it can feel very panicky if someone's not understanding what you're trying to convey to them, and you feel like that means that there is a life or death crisis that is going to happen if you don't take on their perspective or worldview, or if you don't see it from their vantage point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, survival, it's got momentum. That's why we're here. But
yeah,
in those moments to even recognize, whoa, hey, okay, I'm noticing myself getting a bit heated right now, or I'm noticing that like I'm kind of losing capacity to be totally present with this, and I feel like we're ping-ponging back and forth, or having a safe word, you know, like, okay, I want to talk about this, and, you know, let's set up agreements as to the foundations of this conversation, because we both have a you know, let's agree on certain intentions that we have within it. Let's know that if we have this conversation, we love each other, and you know, hopefully this conversation doesn't hurt our love and care for each other. That there is a common wanting to understand. You know, if you can set the stage a bit, especially if you're trying to mend something, and I think a lot of people right now are trying to mend things that, like bridges that have been burned. Mm-hmm. A huge part of it is, you know, what am I willing? Am I willing to catch myself? Can we both hold each other in a space of like, we want a really good outcome? We care about each other. We're gonna call pause if we need to. Mm-hmm. I understand all of this is like, some people are gonna hear this and be like, who's gonna do that? Well, we got to start somewhere. It's not gonna be perfect. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be messy. But you have to start, you know, you have to lead by example. And that means you have to take self-responsibility. So if that is leading by example and going, okay, I'm noticing that I'm getting like a little bit, like my heart's racing a little bit right now. And maybe I need to slow down and take some breaths and find my center again, and we can start again. You know, maybe we need to pause and just kind of take a couple minutes or get some water, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It takes effort. It takes will to do that. And I think that level of will is something that we, you know, I think it's, in my experience, it's fundamental to cultivate that. Whether you're in a global, you know, crisis or not, it's regular day-to-day life. This was a hard muscle to have. So, you know, having it right now, just think about it as like, an accelerated class. You know, you're taking college classes in high school or something like that. You know, it's an acceleration
skill. Yeah. To me, it feels like I have to actively like wrestle my ego out of the driver's seat. Like put my true self back in the driver's seat. And it's like, sometimes that ego just really, really wants to hang on to that steering wheel. And it's hard. It's hard fucking work, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel very fortunate in my life to have had several people who I disagree with profoundly. And through those disagreements and through hard conversations, like the ones that you and I are talking about right now, those are the ones that I've found true, true belonging with, you know? Because, like, I know that they're not projecting or overlaying, you know, a cardboard cutout version of some identity onto me, that they see me as a nuanced person, that they see me in all the ways that we disagree, and they see me in all the ways that we agree as well. And we can find that belonging, that true belonging, with each other because of all of that work, not, you know, it doesn't drive this wedge between us.
Yeah.
But again, both parties have to be willing to come to the table.
And it really is that, like, both parties have to be, the importance of the conversation has to be within that willingness of self-responsibility and, you know, not tapping out. And being like, this is really uncomfortable. Like, one of my best friends, sometime last year, I had this call with her, and she said something that was really passive aggressive, and she had said it similarly a couple times. I was like, hey, that doesn't feel good when you do that, and you've done that before. And she totally shut down, and I was, you know, there was a defensiveness in my tone. Like, I was being protective. I was not in, I was sympathetic, and there was a level of, silence, and she was like, well, I feel like I want to get off the phone now, and I don't have anything else to say. And in my state of like, fuck you, I said, we could do that, or we could stay in the discomfort that's here and not choose to numb out from it and just be with each other and try to find some kind of understanding within it. And it was so uncomfortable, but we did. And, you know, it's not to say that we could have gotten off the phone, that could have been fine, but it did feel like this thing of like, wow, this is really uncomfortable. We don't normally come to this kind of conversation in our friendship. And now here we are. And, you know, we definitely feel like we're on opposite sides of something. And yeah, it was just a very interesting moment, but I'm so happy that, you know, we stayed on, because those are the friendships that, you know, it's like when you can traverse your triggers with someone else that you love, you are way more bonded than you would be. I don't know why. It's like you fought for your friendship over where you could be in self-protection. Yeah. And to me, like, that is one of the most valuable things and one of the most powerful things, to your point about, like, those are the relationships that have changed my life. And the people that couldn't hang in those kinds of relations or those kinds of conversations, you know, it's like, unfortunately, we've had to part ways. Now, some of them have come back years later. I was just on a call yesterday with a friend that couldn't be in that space with me 7 years ago, and now is like, hey, sorry, that was a really hard time in my life, and I was definitely not seeing you clearly.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's possible, but it's just,
yeah. Again, because we are so new in this work around trauma and even having vocabulary to put on it, it's a new concept to just sit with discomfort. You know, even just a couple of decades ago, you know, 15, 20 years ago, it would have been perfectly fine. And I think even now, most circles would say it would have been perfectly fine for you to get off the phone and then, like, have a couple shots after.
Yeah.
And we are so uncomfortable with discomfort that we're willing to create more discomfort in the long run, instead of just dealing with the temporary, like, discomfort of sitting in that mushy space with your friend.
Totally.
You know?
And fighting, like, fighting for each other.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, I get why, but, you know, it's just, there is a level of, like, wait, we're going to disown each other now over what? You know, and yet, oh God, the momentum that is just like bait right now everywhere to do that is insane. Like, I've never seen such divisive in my life. I've never seen such divisive marketing. I've never seen, and when I say marketing, the way that the news presents things to me is marketing, because they are owned by corporations, which are very good at marketing. So it's used in the mainstream media, and it's definitely like, there's different ways of influencing different things that, even influencers, you know, I've had multiple friends who have over 10K in, on Instagram, you know, people are being paid $5,000 a month to talk about certain viewpoints in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, it's right with the wanting, the bait, the temptation to mm-hmm. be like, peace out. This is like way too confronting for me because it doesn't mm-hmm. fit into the narrative that, yeah. that I'm in.
Yeah.
And I think that we all need to question that. We all have our own narratives.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's easy to be like, oh, your narrative. You're stuck in that narrative. It's like, you know,
yeah,
everyone.
When you're willing to, and if you're not willing to sit in the discomfort of all this stuff that you and I have talked about in the last hour or so, like what I see is like your world literally gets smaller and smaller. Like it could not be a more perfect example that we're in a pandemic right now and people's worlds are just getting smaller and smaller and smaller on the physical level, but also like in the like capacity to see each other and to empathize with each other level.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think, you know, within that, there's this book, there's a couple books. One of the books is called The Righteous Mind. And I know you and I both really like that book and that author. Mm-hmm. Totally recommend for this kind of thing. As well as the book Propaganda by Edward Bernays, which is an actual book that actually he was the father. Well, you could say a lot of people call him the father of propaganda, but he was Sigmund Freud's nephew. And he took all of Sigmund Freud's work and marketed with it and taught people how to make whole political campaigns with it and changed the way that you influence people through their core values and core fears. And I think it's important for us to understand this stuff, you know, the fact that like, if I put you in a core fear response, or if I get you in a core fear response, and then I make you make a decision, your subconscious is going to pull on as much information that it has been given so far and perspectives it has already been given by other people or other frameworks about this particular thing that I'm now saying, oh, but you need to make a decision on it right now. And you're mm-hmm. in a fear response. So your consciousness is going to be like, well, other people have said this, so that's the thing that I'm going to go for. Or mm-hmm. I'm afraid of this, and so that's the thing that I'm going to go for. It's very impulsive psychological science that is used for marketing. It's used for persuasion. And I think that we do ourselves a disservice to not question those things either, you and me are into psychology, so it's easy for us to learn about it. We're going to do it on our free time anyways, but to understand like this is what makes movements happen. This yeah. is what makes choices in presidential elections happen. This is what makes social movements occur. This is important to understand the psychology of, because if you do not understand it, you are then privy to it. And it doesn't mean that you don't believe things. It just means that you become aware that people are fed certain emotional states mm-hmm. and then fed what to do. And they do it in a way that it seems like your own idea. And yeah. we have to be aware of that. I mean, I've caught myself so many times in the past 2 years in like this thinking that I'm 100% certain about something and then realizing like, oh, nope, just got like fully into that echo chamber and that tunnel and that yeah. side and that perspective and having to question myself. And it's scary, but
yeah.
it's also like freeing because mm-hmm. I can change my perspective at any time on anything. And
yeah,
I can understand different things. Yeah. There's a freedom in it that I think the rigidity of the way that sides are presented to us does not actually offer.
Yeah. Science has proven over and over and over again that it doesn't know very much and it progresses through questions. And so if you are in a state where you are being asked not to question, to me, like, that is going counter to science, you know?
Which is very confusing when you're being told to follow the science.
Yeah.
Follow the science, but don't ask questions, even though asking questions is the literal scientific method.
Yes. This is something I've been trying to explain to folks, and it's so true. It's like when we get caught up in our ideologies and we are no longer asked to question, we're no longer asked to tap into our curiosity, then we lose our sense of autonomy and sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all Jess and I are trying to help you towards is, you know, honestly, like, I can see the pros and cons of getting the vaccine and not getting the vaccine. And I can see the understanding and, like, and I can understand where people are coming from. And so it's not about trying to convince you one way or another. It really is about, like, any decision that you make has to come from your own sense of autonomy and sovereignty. And to do that, you have to understand, like, these psychological processes that are happening all around us without you even being aware. Mm-hmm. And to unplug from that.
When you understand that most humans right now are in a state of fight or flight, of fear response, of being totally tired and overwhelmed and confused and scared, even if they seem really righteous and loud and like in your face, or they seem like they're being very, very silent and quiet, the point of collective healing is that it happens on an individual level, mm-hmm. in our human to human experiences and how we relate to each other. And
yes.
It's so easy to forget that. But this is, if you're practicing spiritual work, if you're really wanting to understand spiritual principles, like, you have a beautiful playground right now to exercise your skills within. And you don't have to do it perfect, but I think it is really important to, you know, to remember, like, the actual state that people's nervous systems are in, and know that your feeling of centeredness is where mastery is going to come from.
Yeah.
And if you go to the source of that first, you'll have different conversations.
Yes. That's beautiful. That's such a great wrap up for our conversation. And as always, I'm so glad when I get to just chat with you. I feel like I learned so much. I feel so heard and understood. I really feel like your curiosity around, you know, different perspectives really comes through. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate how you move through the world. And mm-hmm. I would love for you to share how folks can find you, my love.
Yeah. The feeling is so mutual, by the way.
Mm.
Instagram is my main platform that I hang out on. On Instagram, it's jessica.benstock, BENSTOCK. And that's the main place. Depending on when this podcast comes out, I do have a website that is being revamped right now, so you guys may get to see my sparkly, clean, new, freshly branded website, which is jessicabenstock.com. And yeah, that's where to find me.
Well, thank you so much, and I know you'll be back on at some point, so
I look forward to it.
Come back on
you on my podcast too.
yes